This is Rabbi Sharon Brous, Rabbi at Ikar, where we're dedicated to reinvigorating Jewish community, ritual, and learning, all while laying the foundation for a just and loving society. You're listening to Ikar's podcast, where you can hear our sermons from Shabbat and holidays, our teachings, our guest speakers, basically anything we think worth hearing that we can capture and stream, you can listen to right here. The whole Megillah. I mean, literally, the whole Megillah. So thank you so much for being with us.
I want to talk this morning about the solar eclipse for a moment. It was 2 weeks ago, and to be honest, I hadn't really thought a lot about it in advance, though I had heard that there were Airbnbs that were booked from Texas to Maine following the path of the eclipse, and I knew that our own beloved Rabbi Deborah Silver had trekked somewhere in the country to go and see the site. But when the magical moment came, I took the glasses and I went outside and I gazed with wonder at the miracle that was unfolding in the sky. It honestly took my breath away. I wanted to say a blessing because that's what we do, but I vaguely remembered that the rabbis had mixed feelings about the eclipse. And so I sat down outside for a few minutes of learning, alternating between the books and the sky. And in fact, my memory was right, and the rabbis, they weren't really ambivalent about the eclipse. They were downright terrified of the eclipse. First of all, it's important to note that our Jewish tradition is biased toward blessings. We're supposed to actually say 100 blessings every single day. There are so many blessings all around us, all the time. Our work is to cultivate hearts that can find those blessings and then lift them up. And we know that the natural world is especially ripe for this attitude of gratitude. There are prescribed blessings in our tradition that are recited at the sight of wondrous snow-capped mountains or Half Dome or the ocean or the desert sky, and there are blessings for thunder and for lightning and for a shooting star, but the eclipse, the rabbis thought that the eclipse was a bad omen. And I think that this is understandable because one can imagine in the ancient world that sudden, unexpected darkness that broke into the midst of daylight would have been utterly horrifying for them. But as a result, our tradition says that we don't bless the eclipse because we don't bless an evil omen. And yet, as I shared with the Liner family 2 weeks ago, Rabbi Dov Linzer, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Chovavei Torah, wrote this year a very thoughtful counterpoint to this approach. His argument is essentially this. He says, a great wonder occurs, one that will not be repeated for another two decades until I think 2044. How spiritually anemic if a person sees the magnificence of God's creation and wants to give voice to their awe, but then is told that there is no place for that spiritual impulse within our tradition. So instead, he argued that we should go out and we should look at the eclipse and we should be moved by it. We should have it awaken our sense of wonder at God's glorious creation, and we should recite a blessing. The obvious blessing that he chose is Oseh Maaseh Bereishit. Thank you, God, for making these wondrous creations. Now, this position made some waves through that dark corner of the internet where halacha nerds frequent. And even though this argument is really well stated, Rabbi Linzer's view remains a minority view. So the question is, do we make a blessing or not? Well, it really depends on whether you see the eclipse as a curse or as a blessing. I chose to see it as a blessing. Now, I've been reflecting on this eclipse dilemma for the last 2 weeks, to bless or not to bless. Obviously, beyond the halachic debate is the striking reality that the very same thing can mean two totally different things to two totally different people based on their perspective. It can be an omen or it can be a wonder. The literary term for a word that holds two completely contrary meanings at the same time is, thank you, Rabbi Hannah Jensen, a contronym, a contronym. But I like the more visual label, a Janus word, referring to Janus, the Roman god of beginnings and endings, who is portrayed in art with two faces looking in opposite directions. So I want to ask you to think about a word or an idea or a phenomenon that can mean two totally different things depending on how you look at it or who is looking at it. Like the word sanction. Is it permitted or is it prohibited? Or oversight? Are we watching over something or did we fail to watch over something? Or the eclipse. And now I want to invite you to think about this. Words and rituals and concepts that can be one thing or its exact opposite are actually the hallmark of our Passover Seder. So here are just a couple of examples, and believe me, there are many. When we come to the Magid section of the Seder, where we tell the story of Passover, the very heart of the Seder, we lift up the plate of matzah overhead, and we declare, Halachma Anya, Di'achalu, Ahavtana Be'ara Dimitraim. This is the bread of oppression that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. The bread of oppression, but wait a minute, I thought that matzah was actually the bread of freedom that was made in haste by our ancestors as we left enslavement and we walked toward the promised land. So which one is it? Is it actually the bread of affliction or is it the bread of our liberation? Well, of course, it's both. In the Breslov Haggadah, we read, this is the bread of material poverty and affliction, of spiritual poverty and cynicism. It is the bread that our ancestors ate in bondage. And this bread, this very same bread, is the bread of redemption. We brought it forth from Egypt, and it tasted like bread from the heavens. But how can one thing be both? The Haggadah goes on to say the bread did not change, our awareness of its source did. So two people can externally experience the same event. The one who is spiritually impoverished will perceive affliction and suffering. The one who's aware of the source of all will perceive benevolent providence, which he will see expressed through the multitude of human events and worldly phenomena. Or in the language of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, what transforms the bread of oppression into the bread of freedom is the willingness to share it with others. So matzah, the central symbol of our Seder, is a contronym. It brings up both affliction and freedom. It all depends on how you look at it and who you invite to eat it. But it's not only the matzah. Think about the charoset, you queens of charoset. The fruit and nuts and wine. What is the meaning of this symbol? In Masechet Psachim, Rabbi Yochanan is clear that the charoset is a reminder of the mortar that the Israelites were forced to use in their slave labor in Egypt. With every bite, we remember the harshness of our enslavement. But isn't it a little bit strange that the terror of enslavement is remembered through something that is so tasty and so sweet? Rabbi Levy offers a different explanation of the charoset. The charoset actually comes to remind us of the apple, because based on a verse from Song of Songs, under the apple tree I awakened you, there were your people born. We learn that our ancestors in Egypt used to give birth under apple trees out in the field, out of sight of the taskmasters who would have killed their children. And here our tradition also hints that not only did they give birth in the apple orchards, but they probably also conceived in those same apple orchards. So then we have to ask, what does it mean to bear children and maybe even conceive children under those terrible circumstances of enslavement? Every new child brought into the world is a miracle, a harbinger of the future redemption of the world. And so the charoset is a symbol of sweetness, even in the darkness, a blessing in the night, a message of hope. So which one is it? Is charoset about pain, or is it about possibility? The answer, of course, is it depends on how you look at it. Maybe it's both. Abaye says that this is why the charoset is both sweet and also thick, sweet to remember those apple trees, and thick to remember the mortar. It's up to us to determine what we taste when we eat it, harm or hope. Just one more for you from the Seder, though believe me, there are many more. David made me cut them out. He's like, let the people eat. Dayenu. It would have been enough, we sing. Dayenu. It would have been enough if you had split the sea, but not let us pass to dry land. But even as we say it, we are thinking it really would not have been enough if you had split the sea, but not let us cross to dry land, because then we would have drowned in the sea. Dayenu, it would have been enough if you led us through the sea to dry land, but then failed to stop Pharaoh's chariots as they pursued us. But really, it would not have been enough, because then they would have captured us and forced our return to slavery. Dayenu. It would have been enough then if you had stopped Pharaoh in his pursuit, but then not provided for us in the desert, but not really, because then we would have died from starvation. The word Dayenu itself is a spiritual contronym. Every time we say it, we are simultaneously affirming both our fullness and our gratitude, and we are also evoking the opposite. It is decidedly not enough. It would not have been enough then, and it is not enough now. And we already talked last week about how the simple act of opening the door at the Seder is a ritual of that same complex nature. Are we opening the door to welcome people in with love or to pour out with wrath? Both of those door openings are in our tradition. So what does all of this come to teach us? While we might take comfort in simple binaries, there is often legitimacy to multiple sides of an argument. The free person, the humble person can acknowledge that and can acknowledge complexity and the truth that emerges from various, even contradictory perspectives. That is not a sign of weakness. That is a sign of spiritual liberation. Perhaps the very essence of freedom is growing in spaciousness. Think about it. From the matzah, we remember the story of our people's affliction and also the courage that it took to move in haste toward freedom. From the charoset, we are bound to brick and mortar of enslavement and also reminded that even amidst the harrow, there is always sweetness, there is always hope. From Dayenu, we're reminded to hold abundant gratitude in our hearts, and also we hear the persistent whisper, we are not there yet. This year, in a time of so much rigid certainty, perhaps the Seder is coming to train our hearts to make room for one perspective while also seeking wisdom and truth in its opposite. Maybe that's how we free ourselves from the narrowness of neural pathways and tribal identities and social behaviors that ultimately limit or even imprison us. On Eclipse Day, David and I became eclipse evangelists. We walked around our neighborhood after I stopped studying tshuvot on blessings with our glasses, and we shared them with everybody that we passed on the street. You have to see this, we said. I noted at some point the variety of responses. One woman literally pulled away from us and tried not to look. This is literally my nightmare, she said. It's the end of the world. Another threw her arms into the air and shouted, "Don't tell me God isn't good. I tell you, God is good." And another person repeated, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God," essentially proving Rabbi Linzer's point about the natural world being a conduit for people's awareness of the holy. And one guy took the glasses, looked up, and then he shrugged and said, "Yeah, I see it," and handed them back to me. And so it struck me. What a blessing that we have the freedom to see the eclipse as an omen, as an awe-inspiring wonder and proof of the glory of God, or even to see it and just shrug. A free people can choose to see the world in simple and binary and flat ways. But we don't have to. We can also choose to see expansively, to see bounty and beauty, complexity and wonder. As we struggle today to hold the many contradictions of our time, I bless us that we move toward a spaciousness that awakens greater awareness, greater sensitivity, and humility and grace. That's what our world needs so desperately now. Not more narrow certainties, but a fullness and a promise that is worthy of the descendants of those who left Mitzrayim, the narrow straits, and began that long walk toward freedom. I wish you Shabbat Shalom and Chag Sameach.
Hi, it's Rabbi Brous again. Thank you so much for listening. Want more content like this? I hope you'll subscribe. And please consider making a contribution to IKAR so we can continue to work toward the fulfillment of our mission to reanimate Jewish life, to embody moral courage, to nurture the spirit, and to work to decipher what it means to be a human being in the world today. Visit our website at IKAR.org. That's IKAR.org. And I hope to see you, maybe even in person, sometime soon.